From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. 50 years ago today, Betty Friedan published The Feminine Mystique. It has been called one of the most important books of the 20th century, both by supporters and detractors. Was it important to you? Why? Is The Feminine Mystique a historic document, or is it relevant today? Stephanie Kuntz is the author of a book about the impact of the feminine mystique. It's called A Strange Stirring, The Feminine Mystique and American Women at the Dawn of the 1960s. Stephanie Kuntz teaches at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, and she's director of research and public education at the Council on Contemporary Families. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
You were 19 when The Feminine Mystique came out, but I understand it was your mom who told you about it?
Well, yes. I was away at college, and she would call me every week. We didn't have emails or texts. And suddenly, she started calling me and reading to me about from this book that she was so angry about it. But as we talked, she told me how sad she had been and how depressed and how she felt that it was all her own fault. And this book had made her realize that it wasn't her fault. There was something wrong with the way society was treating women. And it was a total eye-opener to her.
Tell me a little bit about your mom and what was it that she thought was wrong? I mean, how did she glean this insight from reading this book?
Well, she was very typical of the kind of women who really did gain a lot from the book, The Feminine Mystique. She had grown up during the Depression, and she married my dad. And during World War II, she worked in the shipyards up in Seattle and was very proud of what she could accomplish, you know. I mean, and then after, when the boys came home, they were let go. And that was okay. She thought, well, it's time to start a family. And so she did start a family. And gradually, she just got more and more discontented with the kind of limits to her life, but she didn't feel that she could change them. She wanted to write a novel, but she felt she always had to put it away before Dad got home for dinner. And she got more and more upset and thought that it was her problem, because what psychiatrists were telling people at the day was, if you're not totally happy through achieving only through your husband's achievements, then there's something wrong with you. And so she read that book and she thought, no, there's not something wrong with me. And that's what the people that I interviewed later told me. One of them said, you know, halfway through the book, she flushed her tranquilizers down the toilet.
What is the feminine mystique of the title? What does that refer to?
Well, it's a fabulous name, because there was no such word as sexism in those days. There was nothing. It was what Friedan called the problem with no name, and she named it. She said the feminine mystique is this insidious idea about womanhood that seems to offer you certain kinds of privileges in the short run, but in the long run denies your humanity as an individual. Because the feminine mystique says that women are naturally passive, they depend upon their husbands, that's all they want to do with their lives, that a woman has no need to seek for meaning in her life because she finds it all through her husband's achievements and her children.
You were 19 or 20 when it came out and you started having these conversations with your mom. Did the book's message resonate with you?
I'm embarrassed to say that initially I found it kind of boring. You know, I was a generation for the civil rights movement, and I'd be sitting there kind of rolling my eyes while mom talked, because I figured, well, this will never happen to me. This is just something that happened to this generation of women. But then, of course, you get in the civil rights movement or some other place, and everybody expects you to make coffee or take the minutes because you're the girl. And, of course, once you get into the real world, there were still sex-segregated want ads. You had to turn to the help-wanted female. A woman with a college education earned less than a male high school dropout in those days. And so gradually, many years later, I began to say, oh, well, maybe this is not just my mom's problem and not just her generation's problem, but it's something we all need to work on.
Did Betty Friedan tap into something that was already there, or was her sort of theory in The Feminine Mystique something that kind of brought it into being?
Well, she certainly didn't invent the woman's movement. There had been people working behind the scenes during the Depression and World War II. They were lobbying for the Equal Rights Amendment. Then there was a whole generation of other women, younger women like myself, as I said, who came in because of their experience in the civil rights movement or in the work world. But Friedan was the first to write a really popular book in the language of the women's magazines that women were reading in those days, that said to women, women. She didn't talk about structural reforms or legal reforms. You could, in the 400 pages there, maybe four pages talked about things you could do by legally to improve women's position. But she gave them this message that now to us sounds so duh. Women are people too, she said, with the same natural aspirations for meaning in their life and the same capabilities as men. And you don't have to feel bad if you want something, not other than, but just in addition to their role as a wife and mother. And this was just a liberating message to so many women who felt trapped.
Well, the feminine mystique, as you say, resonated first with your mom. She was a classic Rosie the Riveter, and then maybe foreclosed some of her options because of the choices she took in life. When did it begin to resonate with you? You said at first you found it a little bit boring because you were already an activist. When did you begin to realize the significance of it?
Well, you know, what's funny is I actually never ended up reading The Feminine Mystique until I came to write this book, because my mother had basically given me the cliff notes over her weeks of phone calls. And for me, I think at the time, The Feminine Mystique would not have resonated for me the way it did for her generation. The woman's movement resonated for me because of my experiences just not being listened to. You'd go to meetings. I remember going to meetings, and I would say something, and about 5 minutes later, a guy on the other side of the room would talk to the guy I was with and say, "Jerry, as you said," and it was what I just said. And it was like you were invisible and not even being heard. And so I did become very interested in the woman's movement at that time. But I think The Feminine Mystique I've only learned to appreciate now. And in an ironic way, I think what makes it relevant still today is how dated it is. I mean, for most young women and men today, 1963 could as well be 1396. The laws were so different. The attitudes were so different. Today, we complain about how hard it is to balance work and family. What you need to do to reread The Feminine Mystique is to realize how horrible it was when you weren't allowed to balance work and family, when women didn't have access to meaningful work outside the home, and men didn't have access to a meaningful role inside the home with their children.
I'm speaking with Stephanie Kuntz. Her book about The Feminine Mystique is called A Strange Stirring. You mentioned only about four pages in the entire book about what you could do about these issues. What else did The Feminine Mystique miss?
Oh, well, for one thing, it was directed only at white middle-class women who had a choice about whether to work or not. And that's kind of ironic, because Betty Friedan actually had been an activist. She was in favor of desegregation. She'd worked with the labor movement. She had organized, when she was at Smith College, she helped organize a strike for higher wages for the housekeepers who worked in the dorms. But instead, she devoted this particular book to the kind of woman who seemed to have the most privileges but yet seemed unhappy. And I have to say, Ross, that when I first went back to the book, I thought, well, gosh, these were just a bunch of privileged women. You know, they weren't hurting as much as white working class women or African American women. But then I began to realize, as I interviewed these women, that that was what was so confusing to them. You know, they knew that they had more privileges. They were living much better than their parents had lived. And so they would turn it inward. They would say, what right do I have to feel this way? And of course, thinking that you don't have a right to feel that way only makes you more miserable.
You mentioned some of the things that in The Feminine Mystique are really fairly obvious today, but it's still an extremely controversial book. Some say The Feminine Mystique launched the attack at stay-at-home moms, which extends until today. What do you think about that criticism?
Well, that I don't think is true. A lot of these people have not read the book either and never went back to it the way I did. At least I ended up reading it. But there were a few things in the book where she talked about this knowledge, this idea that housewife could bring you total fulfillment in a very dismissive way. And if you take them out of context, it sounds like she's saying, well, you know, there's really not much to do for housewives. At one point, she said a baked potato is not the whole world. but in fact, the real attack on homemakers was being carried on not by feminists, but by these people like Philip Wiley, anti-feminists, who were saying that homemakers were basically, they should stay home, but they shouldn't demand any kind of credit for staying home. They should be kind of like a fly on the wall that serves coffee. And there was this big attack on homemakers. Philip Wiley called it momism and talked about this towering mom figures who wanted some respect for her sacrifice when really all she ought to do is shut up and bake cookies.
The feminine mystique was on, it seems like, every bookshelf in the 60s and 70s. If you go to dorms today at Evergreen State College, do women still have it there?
I don't think so much. It's interesting. I assigned it in my class when I was writing this book, and my students only found a couple of chapters of it relevant, but some of it they found very, very relevant. For example, she has a chapter called The Sexual Cell, in which she talks about the way advertisers try to manipulate you into buying things by making you feel bad about yourself. And she talks a little bit about the way that women are manipulated to second-guess their looks. And not only did the women in my classes find that very, very familiar, but some of the men said it's happening to them, too, that they're beginning to feel bad about not having six-pack abs.
Those are very contemporary insights.
Yes, they were.
Even though they're,
another thing she said that was really interesting and that most people don't realize is, but some people think that Friedan was anti-male or anti-marriage. No, as a matter of fact, at one point in the book, she says, look, a lot of women think there's something wrong with their partner. They blame their husband for their discontent. You don't need a new partner. You just need a new meaning in your life.
Some of the meaning of the feminine mystique has kind of faded in importance as society has changed since it was published 50 years ago. What about 50 years from now? Do you think it will retain its relevance, or will it be kind of just gathering dust somewhere 50 years from now?
Well, I hope that it won't be gathering dust, because I do think that it's really important to remember where we started from, how far we have come from a world where the legal definition of rape was forcible intercourse with someone other than your wife. You know, we have come a tremendously long ways. But, you know, in some ways, I think we've come further in combating the feminine mystique than we have in combating the masculine mystique. And people talk about how boys are having trouble in school because of a feminized classroom. Actually, what's happening with boys, to the extent that they are having troubles, is that they are still buying into this masculine mystique that real boys don't study, real boys do all of these other kind of things, and real boys just expect to make it in the world. So I think that the masculine mystique really stands in the way for some young men in terms of embracing new opportunities, both at home and new fields of work. You know, guys get bullied so much if they are interested in nursing or in some kind of fields that were traditionally seen as feminine, but are in fact the most rapidly expanding sections of the workforce today.
Stephanie Kuntz talking about the impact of Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique. The book was published 50 years ago today. Kuntz has written her own book about just how far we've come and the impact of Friedan's work. It's called A Strange Stirring. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.